Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Michelle Boisvert, speech and language pathologist and co-founder of EasyReportPro.com. I am thrilled to share that I'll be co-hosting a free one-hour presentation with the amazing Mei-Ling Chan on February 3rd at 5 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. This course is perfect for SLPs who are curious about leveraging AI tools to improve therapy outcomes while staying within ethical guidelines. We'll explore practical, actionable ways to write better prompts and save time, all while maintaining the integrity, the expertise, and quality of our work. Whether you're new to AI or already experimenting, this session is packed with insights to level up your practice. This course is called AI-Powered SLP, Mastering Ethical Prompts for Better Outcomes, and it's free to enroll until February 3rd with the code AI2025. Learn more and reserve your spot. Visit SpeechTherapyPD.com. Don't miss this chance to expand your skills and make a real impact. Thanks so much for listening, and I can't wait to see you at the presentation.
You're listening to On the Ear, an audiology podcast sponsored by SpeechTherapyPD.com. I'm your host, Dr. Dakota Sharp, AUD-CCCA, audiologist, clinical professor, and lifelong learner. While I primarily work with pediatric cochlear implants and hearing aids, I am absolutely intrigued by the many areas of audiology and communication in general. This podcast aims to explore the science of hearing, balance, and communication with a variety of experts in hopes of equipping you to better serve your patients, colleagues, and students. So let's go. We are live and on the ear, brought to you by SpeechTherapyPD.com. Becoming an audiologist requires the mastery of a lot of information. Clinical knowledge, different kinds of technology, electrophysiology, balance, the list goes on. Now take all of that information and add in a mastery of business. This is the reality of a private practice owner. According to a 2016 survey from the American Academy of Audiology, approximately 10% of working audiologists describe themselves as owners, or, you know, in an owning capacity. Owning a practice is no easy business, but today's guest is here to help us understand the process and make that dream achievable. Dr. Liz White received her Doctor of Audiology degree in 2005 from the University of Louisville School of Medicine. Prior to this, she graduated with a Bachelor of Arts in Communication Sciences and Disorders in 2000 from the University of Florida. In the past 15 years, she has worked in many facets of audiology, including the cochlear and osseointegrated implant industry, education, clinical, government. In addition, she is board certified by the American Board of Audiology. She is very much involved in her community. She's the vice president of the Ascension Catholic School Board and is the vice president of membership for the Florida Academy of Audiology. She's a member of the American Academy of Audiology and the Academy of Doctors of Audiology. Additionally, she's a new trustee, this is awesome, to the board of the American Academy of Audiology Foundation. Dr. White has achieved the status of scholar with the American Academy of Audiology since 2015. And Academy scholars are those who complete a total of 50 continuing education hours over a two-year period. That's awesome. She is on top of her game. Dr. White is a powerhouse for private practice leadership. She is a strong advocate for the profession of audiology, and we are so fortunate to have her join us for today's episode. Hey, Liz, how are you doing?
Hey, Dakota, I'm great. That's a good intro. Made me smile a couple times. That was cool.
Well, you have a lot to smile about. You've done a lot of fantastic things in, you know, in a pretty short career so far.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. We have a lot to learn from you. And I kind of just want you to print out your resume and send it to me and I can kind of, you know, try to stay on some, like trying to hit some benchmarks here.
That's funny.
Okay. So you currently own a private practice.
I do. Coming up on 2 years.
That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I have a lot of questions about this because like a lot of other I would say most AUD programs at this point have at least a business class or something that, you know, mentions how private practice works. But I would say that my, you know, program did not like have a lot of information on how this works. And I have to assume it takes a lot on your end of figuring it out as you go, or, you know, maybe you have a background in business. I'm not sure. So what led you to private practice after such a, you know, a career of so many different, you know, aspects of audiology?
Yeah, good question. So had you asked me this question back in 2004, 2005, I would have said there's no way I'm ever going into private practice. In my school at the University of Louisville, we did have a business class. And interestingly, one of our actual professor, the professors in the School of Medicine audiology program actually owned their own private practice. So we were really kind of ingrained in that, and we were all very involved as students. But we had to work on a business plan back, 17 years ago. And it was on a floppy disk. Like, that's how long ago it was. So this is just a little side note. We, in 2007 here in Florida, Tropical Storm Fay came through, or some year, 2008, 2009, something. And my business plan, I know, was in my garage, and it got flooded. And I actually like looked at it, and I was like, I am never going to need this. And I threw it away. You know, 13 years later, or whatever, 11 years later, I went looking for that. I'm like, maybe I didn't throw it away. Maybe I could find the floppy disk that it was on. Because that would have been a good starting point for a business plan, because that was definitely something that was a lot of, like, I was like, can someone just give me theirs and I'll just kind of edit it for myself? But that didn't happen. Like, it was putting it together and reviewing it for months to make sure it was right. I'm going to go back to your other question too. Like, how did I get to private practice after doing all those other things? I'm actually so glad that I did all those other things, because it taught me so much. I was in some really good situations for a job and some really not so great situations. And I learned the right way to do things and the wrong way to do things. Like, there's no way that right out of school, I felt like I was prepared to go into owning my own business and doing all the things that are in a private practice. So I'm glad to have had 14 years or whatever it was of other experiences that kind of showed me, no, I'm not going to be micromanaged. I'm not going to be treated with disrespect. I'm going to do things the way that they're meant to be done, and go for it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what drew you to the idea of private practice?
So I started tinkering with the idea just about 4 years ago. I was in a job that really was not working for me. And as soon as I started there, I was about a year into it at that point, by the way. I was like, this is not going to be where I'm ending my career. There is no way. And the biggest thing there, and I think we'll probably touch on this later, was the disrespect and not recognizing the title of doctor. So that was like a huge cherry on top for my leaving there. But I actually spoke to one of my mentors from Louisville, and he was like, Liz, you probably some bad words I shouldn't say, but he's like, you could do this. He's like, don't even doubt yourself, just go ahead and just do it. You could be one of those big names in private practice because you have the drive behind you. And so from that day, I was like, this is what I'm doing. And I started kind of slowly researching and reading books about business and private practice and talking to other private practitioners, and then just decided just going to go for this.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you feel like, so besides that mentor who kind of gave you that, I feel like a lot of us need that, someone to just reaffirm what we already know, you know, is true for ourselves.
Oh,
do you feel like you had some like specific mentors or colleagues who were already in the private practice world
guidance? At that point, I did not have really any other guidance from any other private practitioners. I did attend a conference. I want to say it was late 2017, put on by Jill Caseworm. She's an audiologist up in Michigan, private practice owner and a very successful practice owner. Yeah. And I went to a conference where she put it on, and it was amazing. And so I was like, this is something that I could do, but never really had anybody personally that I knew in town or anything that was kind of a mentor in that way.
Gotcha. So starting out, I mean, I guess it was a lot of reading books about private practice.
And, you know, luckily those Facebook pages, all the audiology Facebook pages, just talking to other people and learning from other people. I mean, it's, you don't know what you, I didn't know what I was doing. And I started very, very lean. I rented just a little tiny room in a psychologist office. I'm still there, actually. Like, I did not want to put out a lot of money. I didn't want to, I didn't know. I'm like, is this going to even work? Like, you don't want to take out a huge loan and then you're, what am I going to do? And there's nowhere else that I want to work in town anyway. So I'm going to make this work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a, so that's a great point. So it's when you've reached a point where you know what you want to do, but there aren't any other, you know, there's no places or opportunities for you to make that a reality. You kind of have to make it a reality on your own.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, there's like nowhere else to be. So doing my own thing is really, it's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, that's amazing. What would you say was like your first step? Like, what was the first realistic step you took that was in the direction of, okay, I'm going to make this a reality?
I want to say it was, and I wish I had thought about it earlier and I meant to look it up. I was really starting a business plan. And it took, I was like, once I decided I was leaving that place where I was like, okay, I don't work on Mondays. I think that was my day off. I was like, I'm going to, every Monday, I'm going to start working on my business plan and this is going to be done. Yeah, that didn't happen. That I knew for a year I was going to resign from that job. And I did not start working on my business plan until the Monday after was my last day, because you're just, you don't have extra time to work on stuff like when you're actually employed somewhere else. So, but the business plan, and I can't remember. There's like Business Planning for Dummies or something like that. It was just this app you could, a program you could buy, and it walked you through all the steps. And of course, nothing is audiology related. There's like,
of course,
you know, a podiatrist, or there's a bakery, or there's a shoe store. So you kind of have to, like, there's examples, but they don't really go along with audiology at all. And I pulled that business plan together and was actually pretty proud of it. I've sent it to a couple of other people now who are thinking about going out on their own.
Sure.
I'll
share. what are some of the, so I remember we had to do, it has to be the skeleton version of a business plan for the business class I took. I can't imagine if I took that to a bank or somewhere, anyone would take me seriously. So what do you feel like are some of the, when you can compare, you know, the starting a business for dummy podiatrists or whatever, compare that to what the reality was as an audiologist, does anything stick out, things that people might not realize, you know, come into play as an audiologist that do for other businesses?
No, I think it's completely, everything was completely different. So different. I was like this, you know, maybe I don't even remember because that was now over 2 years ago. And with private practice, your memory gets really, really short because you're too busy all the time.
Yeah.
I wish I could tell you exactly, but there's nothing that's actually ringing a bell that was really like, oh yeah, that's going to be the same in my business, because it just, it wasn't.
Sure. So it sounds like you were like totally self-funded out of the gate.
No, I did. So your options are, you know, if you're self-funded, great. I don't have that kind of extra cash laying around. So when I started talking to other people, your options are to either go get a small business loan, or to go to a bank, or you can go to one of the manufacturers. And just talking to other smaller practice owners, they were like, well, banks don't know audiology. No one knows audiology. You know, you tell someone you're an audiologist, they don't even know what that is. So banks certainly don't know audiology. So I actually went to my favorite manufacturer and asked for a loan. And they were like, are you sure that's all you need? Like, I didn't ask for very much because I knew I had a very small rent to pay. I just wanted to get the equipment that was so important to me so I could provide best practices. And I didn't ask for very much. And they were, I think they were like, okay, great. Yeah, we'll give her this girl money. She's not even asking for that much. So, and I'm like happy. Like, I look at the statement, I'm like, woo, I'm doing much better than I was supposed to be doing paying this off too. So it's good.
Perfect. So you would recommend that route?
Well, so if I had to do it again, so there are, you know, unit commitments and percentage of market share stuff. It's been fine. It's really been fine for me. But I would probably next time around, especially if I were to open a second practice or something, I would prefer to go to a small business. Now that I know, you just know so much more and you meet so many more people. So I didn't know anybody in the beginning and I didn't know any of the stuff now, like because of, I guess because of COVID and because I'm a member of the chamber and things, I've met all these other professionals that are part of the Small Business Administration. And I feel like they would be a very good guidance now, but back then, not so much.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think a lot of it is, you know, confidence in the terminology and the lingo. Oh, and yeah. When you're getting into that world, when you're dipping your toes in, you have no idea what to say to get your point across. Like you said, they don't know what audiology is. So you have to really be able to communicate in their world. But
yes,
you've never had any exposure.
So I can do that better now for sure.
Yeah, that's really good insight. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Other first steps of getting started, it sounds like you are a natural born networker. You've mentioned, you know, people from all over who have been helpful or who you've contacted to help you through the process. I know that's one of the things we talk about in the business class is the importance of networking. But I know, so we have a lot of listeners who are AUD students. And so I know at that time, it's hard to know, like, am I networking? Like, I'm just a student. I'm just trying to learn. Like, do I need to go to this thing and like get people's business cards? Like, you just kind of have no long-term vision of what networking is. So how important was networking for you getting off the ground? And like, what does that look like for you practically?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you. So I probably really never networked before I had to do this because I was working for the VA. You're not going to network. I worked at for Cochlear Americas. I didn't really need a network really there. What else did I do? I worked as a school audiologist for a very short time. That was really not my thing. And then I was in an ENT and a medical group, and you don't think there's no reason. You're being fed, you know, in those kind of situations, you're being fed patients because you don't have to go out there and tell everybody what you do. So sure. When I really did not network until probably 2 years ago, with other professionals in audiology, I talk to everybody. I love doing that. I love the networking part there, which is killing me not going to real conferences. Cause I can't Zoom network. Like I need the in-person.
Yeah.
Touchy feely stuff. But and that is probably a mistake I made back when I started. But again, you don't know what you don't know. I joined the chamber, and I joined kind of like a referral marketing. What do they call themselves? A referral business type of networking group. So like, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. I send somebody to your business, you find somebody. And that just really didn't work for me in audio in our field. I mean, some people do have it work, but not where I am. Like, again, people don't know what audiology is. I was like, well, I'll join a women's only networking group and see how that is. That really hasn't been, I'll join the seniors. Seniors don't attend, people who work with seniors. That hasn't really been the most successful either. So I have kind of stopped my official networking, but I am the dork that will hand out earplugs to the guy mowing the grass at, you know, in an office building because he's not wearing hearing protection. And I'm the one that's like, I'm going to like, and my kids hate it. I'm like, I'm going to roll the window down and throw some hearing protection in that car window because they're like, don't do that, Mom. No, don't. You're going to embarrass us. I will tell anybody. I love wearing my shirt that has my business on it because it brings up conversation. My kids are talking to people about audiology in a special way. I mean, so my networking has become very different. I just don't think I need to get out there and do all those groups because they really just weren't, they weren't working for me.
Gotcha. Do you do any kind of like social media networking or anything like that? I mean, I guess we'll get into marketing in a little bit, but like,
yeah, I do.
In terms of making connections.
I do. So I have a personal Facebook page. I have a professional Facebook page and a business Facebook page. And what I decided about a year ago, is starting to use LinkedIn in a different. I never used LinkedIn. You know, I've had a LinkedIn profile, but I wasn't looking for a job. I don't know why I need a LinkedIn. But I have met so many people, and I actually decided I wanted to reach out to female nurse practitioners because I feel like women work for women and women want to support women. So I started reaching out to other females. And side note for some of my marketing, there's an amazing audiologist by the name of Katie Armatosky, and she provides a lot of my content for me. So she's great. I pay her monthly. She gives me content for my Facebook page, for my LinkedIn page, for my Instagram, for my blog. And it's good because it's just constant getting in people's faces. And I think that has been really helpful. People are like, I have never even thought about hearing, especially people writing to me on LinkedIn. I have never even given a thought to my ears now, but now like my posts are coming up and people are thinking, wow, and I've gotten referrals from it. So if it works, it works.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic. I love the idea of, you know, the way you're describing, like you're on the ground, handing out earplugs, like being, you know, something up. It's a, you're a person, like you yes. own a business, but you are, there's a really a face to the business that people can have a relationship with.
Definitely. I think the face part is so important. You know, cause I'm not this, you know, I'm a one man, one woman show. I am the only employee. So I do it all. I am the person who does the billing. I am the person who sees the patients. I'm the one who's working 24 hours a day because there's always something to do. I'm the one that's sure. cleaning the toilet. I, you know, I am doing all of the things. Eventually I would love to hire someone. I'm getting closer and closer to that point, but I want people to see the face behind the business for sure.
Yeah.
I actually hung up a picture of my family in my office because you know, it's a whole like support small business thing, but I want people to know, like, I'm not made of millions. Like, I don't do this because it's fun. I do love audiology, but I also need to make a living. Like, so people are like, oh, this is your family? I'm like, yeah, they kind of have to eat too. So
yeah, it humanizes you. It's great.
Definitely.
So to the idea of like kicking things off, how then, like, what did your early clientele look like? Where were they coming from? How had they heard about you? Is that still the case, or has that evolved over the last couple of years?
So that's a great question. I officially saw my first patient on January 7th of 2019. And it was a patient from an old practice who was like waiting for me, and then a friend's mom. So like my first, and then like a couple old patients who had known where I was. I don't think at that point I was not allowed to do any solicitation. No, I had to wait a full year. So it was just people that were like, okay, I'm just going to kind of follow you, and I'll email you every month or so to see if you've opened your practice yet. So like my first couple of weeks, it was like, okay, I'd see a patient on Monday, and then maybe I'd see two patients on Thursday. It was a lot of like, wow, this was like, I thought people were going to be knocking on my door like immediately. So I kind of, you know, you get a little scared.
Sure.
I do digital marketing. Well, I shouldn't say that. I hadn't done that yet. I tried some newspaper stuff, and I'm like, no, I'm not doing newspaper, because the newspaper is like, well, you have to offer some kind of discount. And I don't do that because I don't want the people who are shopping around. Like, you're going to come to me because you've read the reviews, you've had word of mouth referrals. There's not very many people that provide best practices, and I mm-hmm. make a difference, and I want people to know that I'm one of the people that's doing the right thing in this county. So sure. Now it's a lot of word of mouth. I do advertise in a couple church bulletins, one that I'm a member of, and then like some other ones that are associated with that. My Google SEO has been pretty successful too, but I'm not doing direct mail. I've never done direct mail. Okay. I do humanize things though. Like, I write out my own birthday cards for my patients, and I send out gotcha. Christmas cards, and I'm very personable, and I think that is really, really helpful.
Yeah. So at this point, do you feel, yeah, that's awesome. I think it's becoming more and more rare for business owners to invest in those relationships.
Oh, it's so important.
And that's where all of your referrals are. I mean, probably the vast majority of any practice's referrals come from word of mouth and having those relationships.
And that's what I want to get to. Like, I want to get to completely word of mouth, and I feel like it's starting to happen. It's been pretty awesome the last few months, even through COVID.
Yeah. Do you feel like at this point it's still – do you feel like you're seeing a lot of people coming in for more like digital sources versus print versus word of mouth? What do you think?
So I'm going to guess it's probably 75 digital, 25. Well, I can't say that. Word of mouth. Word of mouth is probably like 60, and then digital is probably 30, and then 10% is word of mouth right now.
Gotcha. Cool.
These are things I should track. Yeah, I should track.
Yeah, you want to know what's working for you.
These are things you do want to know. Yeah, and I do. I ask every person while they're in front of me, well, how did you find me? Like, I don't really have somebody answering my phones. I kind of have like a part-time. I have a virtual receptionist, which is amazing. They schedule my appointments. I don't even know these people.
Interesting. I've never heard of that.
Oh, it's so fantastic. They're not perfect, but I don't have to answer my phone anymore because I do not like answering the phone. Plus, now I'm too busy. Like, back when I started on January 7th, the phone would ring and I'd be like, oh, hi, I'd like to get you in. But now it's like, okay, I don't have time to talk on the phone. Plus, when patients call me, they want to talk to me, and I don't have 45 minutes to have a conversation all the time because there's just so much other stuff to do. Yeah. So I ask them personally while they're in front of me, well, how did you find me? And it's a good conversation point too.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. I think that's so awesome. I've literally never heard of a virtual receptionist, but it makes a lot of sense in a world where so much can be done online like that. It's like, you know, it makes a lot of sense.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, it's great. And there's an app for it too. And they send me an email and they take a message and they schedule appointments too. So it's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked a little bit about marketing, but I'm curious, do you have any, it sounds like, maybe the newspaper might be an example, but are there any like pitfalls or things you ran into that you wish you were now looking back? You're like, that wasn't even worth putting the time or the money or effort into.
Yeah. So the newspaper was definitely one of those things for me. Like it just was not, I would say, you know, I spent a lot of money and maybe I got 2 calls from it. Just not worth it for anything like that. I have some huge retail hearing aid stores, if you will, like basically in my backyard. Almost I could, if I look out my back and if I had a really good arm, I could maybe throw a football at a big, huge retail chain. And these places run 4-page full ads in the newspaper weekly. So sure. I'm never going to compete with them. And that's not really the kind of people that I want to compete with anyway, because those people that are doing that, they're out to like nickel and dime and bait and switch, and they're not providing best practices. So the whole newspaper thing is just not my gig. What other pitfalls? Probably some of just the networking things. I spent a lot of time going to meetings, and back in the beginning, it was fine. I had a lot of time.
Sure.
But I would say probably last September time frame, I made a list, and it was like, what is important in for me right now? And I, you know, had these little post-it notes, and I was moving things around, and the things that just weren't working, and a lot of the networking things. Another thing that really wasn't working is I thought, okay, my husband works in the home healthcare world. I'm going to get into all these skilled nursing facilities, and so I would go to 2 of them once a month, and I would just sit there. Like nobody would come into the physician's office and come see me. And I was like, all right, I'm packing up my portable, packing up all my stuff. I'm sitting here for 4 hours. I've driven a half hour to get there. Like it was a waste of my time. And so I did that for about 6 months. And I said, this is not. And plus, like, I can't provide my best practices in that kind of facility. Like it's just not traveling with my real ear. I can't really do the testing that I would want to do. And so I said, I'll do these like on a one-off type of situation if people need me, but I can't go sit somewhere because I'm putting patients that want to see me in my actual office. I'm putting them off another week or so.
Yeah. Wow. That's really great insight. I'm really glad you shared that. I think those are definitely some rabbit holes people could, spend a lot of time and effort on and then, you know, not really see anything come of it. So it's great that you're able to share that.
Yeah. And I know it works for some people. I have an audiologist friend who's in Chicago area and she's very successful in some of these places, but it just has not really worked out for me. And I just had to figure out what was important and let some things go.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. It's definitely going to depend on the region, but I think, that it's really good insight.
It's tough.
So with you mentioning, you know, providing best practices, trying to have a space where you can build these relationships, things like that. When you were first starting out, like what were some of your priorities in terms of a space and equipment? What did you know from the get-go? Okay, these are going to be my priorities as a practice in terms of what I want to provide.
That's a great question. So I knew, like the first thing I researched probably before that business plan program, which is still killing me that I can't remember the name of that. I searched what real ear system I wanted because I had used real ear most of my career until the job previous to my private practice. And they would not purchase it because they just didn't even really care about audiology enough. Yeah. And so my first thing I researched was a reeler system. And those are really expensive. And so me trying to be lean and green and open this practice on a tight budget, I went with one that is, it's amazing. And it was a lot less of a cost than some of the ones that you might see like in university clinics and at the VA and stuff, but that was fantastic. Sure. And then I also knew, I was like, well, I'm going to be renting a tiny little room. It ended up that I got two tiny little rooms, so that was good. But I was like, I can't get a huge booth, like, and plus booths are so expensive. Mm-hmm. So I went with a, it's called a whisper room, and it's been a perfect segue just right now until I grow and I'll get a real booth. And I actually have two real booths now in storage because people didn't want them anymore, and I was like, well, I'll take them. So they're sitting in storage for when I need them. Yeah. So I trying to just keep things like less expensive. And then, my audiometer, my tympanometer and my portable, I got those from a smaller audiology company as well, which I spent like probably a third of what most people do. And it's, everything is, it's, it works fine. Like, I, it was a learning curve for me because I was always used to using the brand that everybody knows, but I was like, I can't afford that brand right now. If I pay that, then what am I going to do? So I went with a lesser known brand, and the customer support has been amazing because it's a smaller company. So life has been really, really good with that.
Wow. That's fantastic. Those are really great insights. I don't think people talk about that enough. You know,
probably
that...
not. Well, because you think like, I'm just going to get what I'm used to. And I'm like, I can't get what I'm used to.
When your hand is forced, I guess. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So I'm assuming then that your practice primarily provides, you know, audiologic care, specifically, you know, with hearing aid interventions. I know you have a background in cochlear implants and Bajas. So when you look to the future, you know, your space expands and your staff expands, What are you hoping to incorporate in the future?
I cannot wait till this happens. Yeah, I want to. So my current practice is fee for service. I am out of network with all insurance companies, so everything is private pay. But eventually, I do want to start a second business where I will be working with cochlear implants and probably more of like a like the cochlear provider network type of thing. Sure. We have no surgeons in our county. I'm sorry, I shouldn't. We do have surgeons who have done cochlear implants. Our hospitals don't allow it. So everybody has to go kind of out, at least an hour drive, have their surgeries, and then they could come back to me. So I cannot wait to get cochlear implants back under my belt. And I know a lot of patients are waiting for that too. And there's an audiologist in Orlando who's like, you need to get on it again because you're sending me all these patients and I want to send them back to you.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So so what does that look like in terms of next steps? So
of
do you
time?
Think you'll, yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good question. So I am like busting at the seams right now with the little space that I'm renting. If you look under my desk, you'd be, I'm embarrassed actually, because there, I have so much, so little room that I have like so much stuff stuffed under my desk. So I'm starting to look for new spaces. I don't know the time frame on that yet. I have some things I'm thinking about. I'd love to have a second location as well, which then would require, you know, another provider. I will soon be offering auditory processing testing and possibly the therapy with it too. So that is, I'm very, very excited about that because I was diagnosed with an auditory processing disorder earlier this year. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to like do the therapy on myself. And I want to, I have friends who I'm pretty sure have auditory processing. So I have like this whole list of guinea pigs that are like waiting for me to get going with it.
Wow. Yeah. So it sounds like you are, it's probably coming soon then. If you're already, you know.
Yeah. I already ordered the, all the, I've already ordered the auditory processing stuff. So that's just back ordered right now. So that will be coming. And yeah, so things are moving in the right direction, which is very, very exciting.
Very cool. I'm excited for you.
Thank you.
Do you feel, something I'm really interested in is, and I, even though when I was, you know, in school, one of my placements was in a private practice with that audiologist, I feel like I didn't get to see enough of his extra duties that weren't seeing patients. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what is a day like for you? Like, it's Monday morning, you get up, you're ready to go, probably at an outrageously early time, knowing your schedule and with your family and everything. So yeah. What does a day look like for you as a practice owner when it comes to clinical versus administrative stuff?
Oh my gosh. So that's something else I've learned as well. So, you know, when you're first open, you are just like raring to go and you're like, yeah, I'll take you at 12 o'clock. Yeah, I'll just take 2 minutes to eat my lunch. And you know, you just, you're desperate in the beginning, but I have gotten a lot smarter. I now, you never stop thinking about work. Never, yeah. ever, ever. Sidebar real quick. A friend of mine who's an orthodontist here, who I went to high school with, when I told him that my plans back in 2016, he's like, I think it's a great idea. Just so you know, you're never going to work harder. And I was like, okay, fine. Like, I'm ready to work harder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was he was not lying. I texted him last month and I said, hey, I think about you every day, because that was that is so true. And he said, well, I hope you realize that, but that you're also seeing the benefits of working for yourself. And that is 100%. Like I said, it never ends, but it's amazing. So like my day, Mondays, I got smart. Mondays always start at 9 a.m. with an hour of admin, so I can catch up on anything from the week before, any like, you know, messages that came in over the weekend. And then I started taking my own lunch from 12 to 1 every day, which was smart too. Now I might only take 2 minutes to eat, but the rest of that 58 minutes is admin, or I've been scheduling a lot of meetings via Zoom or whatever, webinars during the 12 o'clock lunch hour too, just to get that stuff out of the way and not take up actual office patient time. I bring my computer home probably 80% of the time and do extra work at night, because there's so much. Like this month in particular, I've attended 3 conferences, and you know, you have like people give ideas and I'm like, oh my gosh, I should be doing that too. So we are learning slowly that you can't do everything. Like you just cannot do everything. You have to just take it slow, you know, bring it on at the right time. You can't be jealous. Like, but you want to help in so many ways and you want to do everything that you can, but it also is just, you can't do it all. And me being the only person, I definitely cannot do it all.
Yeah.
I'm kind of trying to come to terms with that. I just read this book called Do Less, but I'm really struggling with that because I don't know how much less I'm doing.
Sure. So would you say, so on a day where you start seeing patients, is it like you're seeing them from a certain number of hours in the day and then you have time? And then like when you're in that admin time, like what are you doing? Like, are you, you know, writing notes? Or are you like marketing? Like what is that time spent on?
Everything. So you're paying your bills, you're writing notes, you're doing all your, like I'll sit down probably Saturday morning and I'll knock out all of my Facebook posts for November.
Oh,
so
wow.
I schedule them all. I've learned it. It takes me about 90 minutes to just bam, get it done. But everything takes time. You're just doing so much. You're going into QuickBooks and you're making sure like everything is adding up the way that it should be. Like I said, I don't take insurance, which that is a blessing, because that would be, there's really no time for that. Like, 'cause every single insurance claim that goes through is pretty much a fight. Even I just decided the other day, I took, I billed, patients didn't pay me. I was like, I'm just going to try this. Through your Blue Cross Blue Shield Federal. And it's been a month and I hadn't received the money yet. So I had someone in my office call who's kind of part-time, and she was like, oh, they said you didn't submit everything. But then she went through it with them and I've submitted everything and I don't have time. She was on the phone for 45 minutes just to prove to them that we submitted everything.
For one
little patient. Yes.
Yeah.
And if I was a big, huge like corporation, yeah, I would have some, I would probably work with, but as a small little practice, I just can't. Mm-hmm. And I can courtesy bill, or the patient can do it themselves and I can walk them through it, but I just can't take that on.
Sure.
Too much.
Yeah. That makes total sense.
Yeah. I think a lot of practices I think are kind of getting away from working with insurance because it's always a headache. I don't take any third parties. Like everything is just private pay.
Yeah. Keeps it simple.
Keeps it simple. Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you feel like, like, I know that that real ear is a real priority for you when it comes to seeing your patients. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming you're primarily seeing adults. So,
yeah, I have a like, I have a couple kids that I see, like teens, okay, but mostly adults.
Gotcha. So a lot of your day is probably spent working with hearing aids, right?
Yep.
Yeah. This is just like out of curiosity. The biggest problem with hearing aids is the amount of stuff you have to have on hand to be able to fix things. Mm-hmm. And I know you're working with limited space. How do you make that work?
It's all under my desk. No, there's actually part of my growing is I'm hoping this is going to work out. I don't even want to talk about it because it might not work out. But I don't keep everything. Like today I had somebody come in with a probably 10-year-old. Oh, no, no. Yeah. 10-year-old Siemens BTE. And I'm like, oh, shoot. I don't even know if I have this stuff. So I start like pulling out stuff. And I ended up having it. But then I didn't have the software that I would connect to, even though that was weird. It should have connected. But whatever. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff. And that's like that's part of my growing pains right now is like I don't have enough for everything. But, you know, patients kind of understand. I had this woman who came to me with a Sonic Innovations. I haven't worked with Sonic Innovations since 2004, 2005. Mm. So I was like, whoa. And I see a lot of transfer patients because they, through word of mouth, they're like, well, this girl got me hearing better. So why don't you go see her? So I had to order all Sonic stuff, which is very similar to Oticon, by the way. But
good to know.
Yeah. All the cables came. I'm like, oh, interesting. And the software looked pretty similar too. So now I've got Sonic stuff that's hanging out.
Yeah, and you're just going to, it's all just going to keep accumulating, I guess.
It's all going to keep accumulating. Luckily, I keep little bins. So it's all sort of organized in little bins in the closet.
Sure.
Yeah.
What would you say is one of the most challenging administrative duties or the one that, you know, is... If you're going to warn someone going into private practice about the administrative role, like one thing that you really want to make sure they understand and have realistic expectations on.
So I think it's a fault of a lot of us is we feel bad asking for money. Like, yeah. So my kind of part-time PCC is there. She works. I rent space from a psychologist. And so there's a psychologist, there's me, a social worker, and a licensed mental health counselor. So she kind of does work for all of us, but not me the least. So when she's there Monday, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, I've gotten a lot better. I'm like, just go up front. Marie will take care of you. But when she's not there on Thursdays, I feel awful for charging people. And I shouldn't. I should not. And so just in the past 2 weeks, I was like, you provided a service. You fixed these people and they were in bad shape before. You have to stop feeling bad. The orthodontist doesn't feel bad. The plumber doesn't feel bad. This guy doesn't feel bad. You just need to get paid for your service. And so that is, I think that's the hardest thing because we feel so bad asking for money. Please, can you pay me? But it's so because I'm still not very good at it, my new plan for Thursdays when she's not there is I'll say, okay, well, I'll just have Marie invoice you next week. So I still don't have to deal with it. So if you can have somebody helping you at the front, that is certainly the best. And I can't wait till I can get to that in a more full-time status. But that's what I struggle with the most is asking people to pay me.
Yeah. I totally get that. I have a very similar issue, and I think you bring up such a great point in that comparison. I feel like for us, it's because our impact feels so personal, and yes, we can like literally see it on their face, the emotional impact. It's like, oh, I can't, you know what I mean? That this,
yes,
you know, and I totally see what you mean with
yeah,
that comparison.
I've been like shooting myself in the foot because I have a separate line item for programming. I have a separate line item for real ear. And I'm like, okay, well, I just won't charge you for the programming. Although that's the biggest part. The real ear, yeah, I ran it. But the programming, I got to get in there and really fine tune it to match the real ear. So don't stop. So the past few, I would say the past like 5 inherited patients I got, I've been doing a lot better. And I'm kind of proud of myself.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's such a great, great insight for people who, if they're anything like me, they totally that example that you just gave of the real ear versus programming, I have literally done that.
You've
like,
done it before.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's not cool. And I mean, I've been doing this for 15 years. It's not like I just graduated and I feel bad. Like this is still happening all these years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great, great piece of advice. So on the opposite end of that, though, owning a practice, what would you say is the most rewarding aspect?
I get to control my schedule. That makes me so happy. So, you know, I come in, my day always starts at 9. Of course, I'm there earlier. I drop my kids off at school. But, you know, my kids do many sports. So I end my day at 3:30 if I need to. And I go to I coach sometimes for them, or I go to their practices. So that is one of the best things about it, is that I kind of control what I want. And if I want to go see a patient on a Saturday morning because I want to, it's because I want to. It's not because some big boss told me, you got to go see this patient because they're having trouble. No, it's because I want to do it. And that also, people, you know, it helps make a name for you too, because you do go out of your way pretty often in private practice.
Yeah. Wow, that's a really great point. And it kind of leads me to wanting to talk a little bit about, you wrote an opinion editorial for Audiology Today that, I guess it was in the online version for this month, I think, or last month.
I think it was actually called the recent September-October article or issue. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was really powerful. And just to give like a brief synopsis, basically you were describing, I think, a previous employer situation where essentially, the people in charge, not the patients, but the people in charge of the practice refused to acknowledge you by the title that you had earned of a doctor of audiology. Mm-hmm. And how it sounds like to me in our conversation, that was really a driving force for you to really want to make it out on your own and start your own practice. So I'm just curious, like, I know you're a big advocate for people going into private practice, but also just for, you know, the role of audiologists, the profession of audiology within the healthcare space, if there's anything you want to speak to there.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. This topic gets me like, crazy. So I joined a big group 10 years after I graduated. So I'd been using the title of Dr. White for 10 years. And a year into working there, I was getting tired of the secretaries calling me Liz. Like, I'd introduce myself to the patient as Dr. White, and I'd go up and say, okay, hey, can you schedule him to come back in a week? Yeah, sure, Liz. When do you want to see him? I am Dr. White. He calls me Dr. White. And it was really like, a year into that, I was like, this is enough. So my colleague and I wrote an email to the front desk. It was in an ENT kind of specialty group thing in a big corporate medicine world, and wrote it [S2] Sure. [S1] To the nurses and the front desk. And it got forwarded from them to our office manager and then to legal. And legal came back and said, you cannot use your title. Only the medical doctors and the doctors of osteopathy can use the title of doctor, because it will confuse the patients. And that date was December 4th, 2016, when they told me that. I was livid. Like, I think smoke came out of my eyeballs, because that was terrible. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. And actually, 6 months prior to that was when I decided I was going into private practice. So that was just really the impetus. Like, I've got to get out of this place. Like, so terrible. I had patients writing on my behalf, like, please let her go by Dr. White. It makes sense. She has this education. I hired a lawyer, and the lawyer said, they're a private company. You could go by, they could tell you tomorrow that you need to start going by Joe when you're going to go by Joe. And I was like, hell, I'm going to go by Joe. So they told me, this is what you need to do. You need to say, hi, I'm Liz White. I have my doctorate in audiology, and let me tell you what that means. And I was like, wow. Yeah, there's no time to tell patients that in a 30-minute micromanaged appointment. Mm-hmm. So that was big. But the problem was, I could not, although I wanted to go out in private practice, it took me so that was December 16. I did not resign from there until April of 2018, because we had just sold a house and we hadn't found a new house to buy. And you can't really take out a loan without having some kind of collateral.
Yeah.
And we didn't have collateral. So every day for 15 months, it was more longer than that. It was 18 months. I had to go into that place that I hated so much. And I still called myself Dr. White, because I wasn't introducing myself in front of anybody anyway. Like, I always waited till I got into my office with them, because they can't hear anyway. So sure. I still used Dr. White until the day I left. And then, interestingly, the audiologist, the new grad who replaced me, she was like, do you mind me asking why you're leaving? And I was like, oh, I'm an open book. You can ask me anything. And so I told her some of my reasons, and I said this was one of them. She goes, oh, they changed that rule when I applied 3 months ago. Oh, I was like, oh, that's very interesting. So when I went and turned my badge in, I said that to the office manager. She goes, oh, yeah, they're still trying to figure that out. And I was like, even if they didn't want me to, I wasn't the kind of person who just takes no lightly there. They weren't going to do things. I was working with broken audiology equipment. They wouldn't get real ear. I wasn't just working for a paycheck. Like, I wanted to make a difference, but they really didn't care. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm so sorry you had that experience, but I'm really glad that, you know, you've reached this point, and maybe you wouldn't have had the fire to get here and be able to serve so many people if it hadn't been for something like that.
You know, that's probably true. And unfortunately, I shared that article on different Facebook pages and in emails to my patients. And I have heard back from so many people that this has happened to them. And it's not just in our field, it's in education. A friend of mine said she has her PhD in education and she was applying for something and they told her, leave your PhD off. Wow. No way. Like, that's not even going to happen. No way. Mm. Yeah. So it's been, it's a good story. And I want people coming after me or people who are still in the same position. Like, you don't have to stand for that. You can go find something where you're going to have respect.
Yeah. Wow. I appreciate it.
Oh yeah, sure. My patients will say, because I shared that with them, and they're like, well, can I still call you Liz? I'm like, yes, that's not the point of this. Like, the point of this is, like, we're friends now. Like, a lot of my patients become my friends and I'd love to see them out. But the point of this is, like, just know that there is a title and like, let's acknowledge it at least.
Yeah.
I was basically like the girl in the back. Like, did she test your hearing or was she sweeping the floors? Who knows?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. And you've worked, audiologists in general have just worked too hard to let that, you know, slip
too
by.
Too hard. To go so disrespected. Yeah. Yes.
For those of you listening, if you want to read this entry, it's called Call Me Doctor Opinion Editorial. You can search Call Me Doctor Opinion Editorial by Liz White. It's available for free from the American Academy of Audiology. We're kind of coming up on the end of our time here. I've got a couple more questions. This first one, I am just like, I just want to know, I haven't talked to any private practice owners in the midst of this pandemic.
Oh yeah.
And I know it has to have had some impacts, like far reaching, but I'm just curious, like, where have you seen yourself become more flexible, and where have you, you know, realized you had to trim some things to make it work? I'm just curious, you know, what you've learned through this pandemic.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So, like, middle of March, Florida was a hotspot. So I made the decision to shut down my practice for 6 weeks, which is super tough. And I did probably see maybe 6 patients during those 6 weeks. All were curbside visits, you know, my hearing aid's not working or something, like, it wasn't anybody. So that was tough. So I did add some curbside visits that I never have done before. And, you know, it's March and it's April and May and it's a million degrees in Florida and you're outside with a mask on and a face shield and gloves and people just want to talk to you. And you're like, that's great. But now I'm sweating profusely. This is disgusting, actually. And then it was great when I came back, like, most of my patients, they were ready to come back in. I had a few who were maybe immunocompromised and they weren't ready, but most patients were ready to come back in. And I have all these things. I've got UV lights and I'm spraying. And I was, in the beginning, I would see a patient and then I would add a half hour block to clean. And then I'd see a patient and I'd add a half hour block to clean. And then eventually I had to let that go because I would be booking patients out 2 months if I had to do that every time. So sure. Now it's just like a quicker cleaning, spraying, wiping down. I'm not doing as much as I was, but I think the hysteria with it has a little bit calmed down and people are just, they're more aware. They're, you know, they're washing their hands and all that. But then in June, I actually got COVID myself and my husband and my 3 kids did too. So then I was shut down personally for three more weeks back in June. So that was really tough because then it was like nobody was coming into the office. I wasn't going into the office. So zero money was coming in, which is a little bit hard. My husband couldn't work. We're all quarantined in the house. So personally, that was tough when you can't even make, like, you know, $2 at the office.
Of course, yeah.
So yeah, the COVID has made things a little more interesting, and it's a lot of conversations about it. Actually, I had a new patient come in today, and it was interesting because I talk about it all the time, how we can't see each other's lips and this is making it so much tougher. And then there's the research that says mask use actually degrades speech 4 to 12 decibels. This woman comes in and basically says all of that. And I was like, oh my gosh, you are so smart. This is what we're talking about. And she's like, I need help. I never realized how much I use people's lips for hearing people. So that was like, oh, it's come full circle. Cause I actually predicted this back in March. I said, this is what's going to happen, is that people are going to realize, and you know, it might've taken 7 months to get here, but I had my first patient that actually said it today. So.
Yeah, that's amazing. I don't know that we've had anyone who was self-aware, but our clinic has certainly seen a rise in people who are interested in hearing aids in the last 3 months.
Yeah.
I mean, like a dramatic increase in people asking questions and people who had never had a hearing test before. And it's got to all be related, you know?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was really great insight. So now that we're coming up on the end here, I'm sure just you describing your experience, how, you know, how much more autonomy you have, how satisfied you are, how you get to see the impact and invest in relationships. Is there any like parting advice you would give to audiology students or recent grads or even like seasoned audiologists who are interested in taking that plunge? What would you say to them?
I'd say do it. I'd probably add a curse word in there too, because it is it. Though I sound like I'm stressed, and yes, I am, and yes, I've never worked harder, I actually am so much happier doing this than any other position I've ever had in the last 15 years. It's so much more satisfying, and if you want to spend 2 hours with the patient because their fitting's going to take that long and you've got to pair all this stuff, and you can do that. You control everything, and it's a crap ton of work, but it's just so amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I love it.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear the feedback here and see what people say about, you know, I'm pretty sure you're going to sway some people in that direction.
Oh, I'd
where
love
they
to.
Would have been intimidated.
No, they should do it. Yeah. It's, you know, like I said, 15 years ago when I graduated, there was no way. Actually, after I had my first child, I was like, I think I'm going to get out of audiology. I'm going to go back to school and be a labor and delivery nurse. And then I was like, no, I'm not. I'm not going back to school ever.
So for those people who are interested and maybe want to ask you a few more questions, could they email you?
Yeah, they can email me. My email is dr.white, W-H-I-T-E, at harbor, H-A-R-B-O-R, cityhearing.com. Or you can find me on Facebook as Dr. Liz White as well.
Awesome. And are you guys, so I know you have a Facebook page. Where other social medias can people find your professional page, your practice page?
So on Facebook, on LinkedIn, you can find Liz White there, or Harbor City Hearing Solutions on any of those. And on Instagram too. Why did my computer just shut off? I just started a TikTok. I'm not really,
oh.
all I've done is created the name. I'm going to actually, this girl, Katie Armatosky, I shouldn't say girl, this doctor of audiology in Wisconsin, she's going to be putting on a little class for us subscribers to her program for how to manage TikTok. So I'm very excited about it. It's probably like way out of my league. I'm a little too old for that, but I'm going to try it.
Hey, you've got kids that are probably, are they like, you know, in that TikTok
they
age?
They are in that,
teenager?
They are, but they don't even have phones. So, because I'm mean like that. So maybe,
I was going to say, maybe they could teach you something,
they probably
but maybe
could.
You'll have them to teach them.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, cool. Thank you again so much for joining me. This has been just a fantastic conversation.
This was awesome. I'm so happy that I thought we weren't going to have enough to talk about. And look at us. We're like 55 minutes in. This is great.
Awesome. All right. Give me just a second. I'm going to switch it over to questions. And that's all for today. Thank you so much for listening, subscribing, and rating. This podcast is part of an audio course offered for continuing education through Speech Therapy PD. Check out the website if you'd like to learn more about the CEU opportunities available for this episode, as well as archived episodes. Just head to speechtherapypd.com/ear. That's speechtherapypd.com/EAR.